Now, if all you do is pattern reps, you can change anything, truthfully. Because all these things are things either I created or came from NLP or Ericksonian hypnosis or Gestalt. They come from the four. And some of them are modifications that other people modified of each other. A lot of NLP came from Gestalt, for example. I'll give you some examples of Bandler and Grinder, because they were the guys that were some of my original teachers. They had what they called an impossibles practice, where they would take on anybody who had a challenge, and they'd say, give us your patient, we'll turn them around. And they were unbelievably effective. One example is a guy that had been in a catatonic state for a period of 10 years. And the people at this particular facility said, okay, you guys think you're so hot, because Grinder and Bandler were pretty intense in the way they communicated. You're so hot, great, I'll give you the challenge. Take this guy out of the catatonic state. So you have to picture this. Here's a man sitting in the chair, and Bandler and Grinder walk in the room with the guy, and they bring all the people because they want to watch what are Bandler and Grinder going to do to get this guy out of this. They know it can't happen, but they're curious to see how they're even going to attempt it. Because they know no one's going to get somebody out after they've been in a state like that for 10 years. Catatonic. No movement, no response, no voice, no nothing. Just staring into space. Catatonic. So Bandler and Grinder walk in the room and they say, excuse us. No one else can be in the room. They said, the techniques are secret. They said, you could call it that. It's just, what we do with the patient is our business alone. Now bear in mind, a person in a catatonic state never speaks or moves, but they do here. And then people say, well, we don't know if we can legally leave you here. They said, if you can't legally leave us here, then we can't help. And I said, all right. They close the door. They go over there. John Grinder walks up to this guy, looks him over with this really sinister look in his face. Like, he looks at Richard. Richard looks back at him. They go by and they just touch his head like this. And Richard says, John, lock the door. And John said, what? He said, lock the door. He said, Richard, I don't want to do that again. Lock the door, I'll kill you. He starts screaming at John. He locks the door. Imagine what's going on in his head right now. Richard pulls out a knife, takes the guy's shirt and cuts it off him. Right? Then he comes by, and he takes his two fingers like this. He reaches down the guy's chest hair like this, and he goes, Arr! Jerks out a chest hair. Guy's like, nothing. A little lower. Arr! Nothing. Then he starts speeding up. Arr! Nothing. Arr! Nothing. He gets right in the inside of the leg. As he's about to reach for the hair on a particular part of the body, the guy jumps out and says, you touch it, I'll kill you. True story. True story. Absolutely true story. No exaggeration. 10 years in catatonic. He was ready for drugs. He was ready for therapy. He was ready for just about anything except having those particular hairs individually pulled out. Right? I'll tell you another example. Of the two, John and Richard, Richard is the most bizarre, brilliant, brilliant man who has no rules. I mean, no rules. You think I'm outrageous? He's beyond outrageous. And so one day, he gets another one of these kinds of calls, and they say, okay, great, here's your challenge. We got this guy. He won't work. He won't do anything. He claims he's Jesus, right? And he's been here for the last 12 years. Nothing will happen, right? So Richard walks up to him, walks up to the guy, and says, excuse me. He said, I understand you used to be a carpenter. The man says, what? So that's the thing, and he goes, oh, yes. Right? He said, you are Jesus, aren't you? The guy said, looks at him, and he goes in state and goes, yes, my son. He says, thanks. I'll be right back. He doesn't introduce himself. He doesn't say, hi, I'm Dr. Bandler. I'm here today because I know you think you're Jesus, but it's not really Jesus. You're John Smith. We're going to talk. He doesn't do that. He just goes, I'll be back. Leaves. Now, what does that do? It's a very slight pattern interrupt, because the man's going like, what's he going to do? Where is he going? He's not so certain now, right? He comes back. When he comes back, he's got a measuring tape. He goes, hey, Jesus, come here. Stand up. He stands up. He goes, put your arms out like this. He takes a measuring tape, goes, shh. And he goes, shh, right to the palms, and he said, I'll be back in a little bit. Now the guy's really going, right? Spinning like crazy inside his head. So now Richard has six guys he's hired, big construction guys. They come in with these giant posts laid on the ground, the other one across in the form of a cross, big spike nails. They start hammering it in the form of the cross right in this guy's little bedroom thing, right? And the guy's eyes get about this big. And he goes, "What are you doing? What are you doing? And Richard says, "Well, you're Jesus, aren't you?" The guy goes, "Well, yes, my son." He goes, "Then you know why we're here." Oh, no, my name's John Smith. My name's John. 3 minutes, he became John again. It was an amazing thing. He wasn't ready for electroshock therapy. They'd done electroshock therapy on the guy. He could take shock therapy, he could take drugs, he could take therapy. He was not ready to be crucified, however. There is always a level of leverage that will move people over if you break their pattern enough, okay? Now, remember, the more intense it is, the more effective it is. If it's what they expect, it's not going to break their pattern. So that's the secret, whether you're dealing in a negotiation, by the way. I remember one time when I was negotiating for one of my books, and I went in to do this deal, and I wanted $3.3 million for this book. And they wanted to give me $500,000. Actually, they started out about $400,000. So we were just a smidge apart, $3.3 million versus $500,000, right? And so what happened was, we negotiated over the course of a year. In that year, there was almost no progress, and they came up to 550 at one point. But I wanted $3.3 million. So the president of this company, who never negotiates, calls up my office and says, "I'd like to talk to Tony." And he said, "Look, it was Simon & Schuster. So I just want to tell you something." He said, "We really want you. We really want you as part of our family. We want to make this deal." He said, "We're making a deal for your genre book that's bigger than anybody had." And at that stage, it was true. We did our homework. $550,000 would have been higher than anybody had ever received. He said, "But this $3.3 million, he said, "I don't want to say you're out of your mind, but I mean, it's just, you don't understand. That's not even the realm of possibility." I said, "Listen, I totally understand what you believe, but I said, I know I'm going to get this for the book, and I know the value is there. It's not me just trying to hold somebody hostage." I said, "If you like, I'd love to share with you how I perceive that and see if you agree or disagree." He said, "Well, let's talk it over in person." I said, "Okay." He said, "Do you come into New York?" And I said, "Yeah, we'll figure out when." He said, "Let's sit down." He said, "The last thing he said, though, is don't come expecting $3 million. I said, "That's no problem. Just don't expect me to join you for less." All right? And so I hung up the phone. I get to this meeting. Long story short, we got in this discussion. And in the discussion, we've gone round and round and round. And at one point, I'd gotten him to begin to see that it was worth more than that. Because instead of just pushing, "This is what I wanted," I said, "You know, I think this is what you want." And I walked through all of his needs because I knew what they were. And I said, "And I know I can fill those needs." And I said, "But I got to tell you something." I said, "I think you're looking at me as like a motivational speaker instead of seeing me as a brand that's larger than that, that's the largest in this industry." And I said, "Let me give you my Q ratings from television." I said, "I have no ego about this. I know they're stupid little infomercials. But I have a higher Q rating, and I listed all these major television personalities. And so the people I listed get $3 or $4 or $5 million. So all of a sudden he started to see, oh, my God, my reach is much greater than he ever dreamed. So now he's starting to get the idea that this is possible. So he got up to $1.5 million. To go from $500,000 to $1.5 million, my agent was salivating. She was just like, "Let's close this deal." And I said during the break, I said, "No, I'm not doing less than $3.3 million." She goes, "You're insane. You're getting three times more." I said, "It's not about getting. It's about getting what it's really worth, and it is worth it. It's a win-win deal." By the way, since the deal's done, they've made about $15 million. So they're pretty thrilled. The bottom line, though, is I said, "Look, let's just go in and let's hang in there." So we go in there, and this guy's a very proud man. And at one point in the conversation, he said, "All right, we'll do $1.6 million. He said, "That's it, Tony. That's beyond imagination. That's just because it's you." That he went on and on and on and on and on and on. And I said, "Well," I said, "I really, really appreciate the offer. I know it's coming from a good place, and I know this is a huge stretch for you, but the answer is no." And the look on his face was like he was going to kill me. And he looked at me, he got stone cold, and he said, "You know what?" He said, "I got to tell you something. You're making the biggest mistake of your life. Absolutely the biggest mistake of your life. I got to tell you something. I'm not one of these people, emotional negotiators." He said, I don't have any emotion about this at all." And he was getting so angry. So I reached over, he was across from me, and I kicked him. I swear to God, my agent will tell you the truth. I went, boom, like that. But when I did it, I said, "No emotion except anger," and I kicked him like that. And his two guys in the room started laughing hysterically. And my agent's eyes got about this big, right? And he had nowhere to go, because if he got more angry, he was in the same trap. And that moment, he started laughing. 20 minutes later, I had $3.3 million. 20 minutes. Because once his pattern was broken, he knew there's no place to go. He couldn't be in that state. He was stuck. He was in a stuck state. You follow me? And so in the end, by the way, it's been a great deal for them. But you had to take those moments when somebody's like, there's no way. You had to do something. And that, when I did it, was a risk. I mean, most of the things that control you are patterns that are primarily unconscious. Just making yourself conscious of them, not owning them, that this is my disease, this is my problem, just being aware of them alone starts to break the pattern. Can break the pattern by itself. So the first step we're going to have is awareness. We've got to become aware of all the pieces of the pattern. Because most of you are aware that, okay, when this happens, I get upset. But you're not aware of the process. If you were, you could stop it sooner. So you can't consciously change those things in which you're unaware. Sometimes we develop emotional patterns that consistently denigrate the quality of our lives, yet we're often oblivious to the consequences of these indulgences. We're not looking for behavior here. You might say, well, I overeat. Let's work on my overeating. Let me explain something to you. Any behavior you have, for example, you're getting a result, you're fat, you're unhappy, you have no relationship. That result is a result of some sort of action. True or false? That behavior, that action of overeating, or that action of saying things that make them angry, whatever it is. But what's behind all of this is an emotional pattern that makes you behave this way, an emotional state. So we can change your behavior, but if you still have the same emotion, you're going to create some other action that will put an equally bad result in there. So we're not here to stop smoking. If you don't like smoking, then say, what emotional states do I go in to start smoking? Do I get fearful? Do I get sad? Do I get bored? You want to change the sadness or the boredom, not change the smoking, because otherwise you'll stop smoking, you'll start eating. Right? So we're here not to get to the cause of the problem, but to get to the what of the problem. Who knows? The source of the problem is always an emotional pattern, which is a fancy word for three patterns. Physiology, language, right? Focus and belief. All right? How many follow that? Say I. Outstanding. So we're not looking for behaviors. We want immediately what? Underline that key word. Interrupt the elements essential for its existence. What are the elements essential for the existence of this negative emotional pattern? A specific pattern of using your body again and again. You have to do it the same way to feel the same way. If we just change legs or arms or tone of voice, you can't go in the exact same state. So we want to destroy those elements that are essential for its existence, thereby once and for all giving you not only control of your emotional pattern, but a new set of empowering emotional habits. Interrupt the old limiting patterns, create new, more empowering alternative languages, beliefs, physiology, and condition these new states until they become a part of your life.